Welcome to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Live from West Virginia University, a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice today. It's a bi-weekly show that highlights emerging and current trends impacting marketers like you today. And today our host is Michael Lynch. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's not going good. It's rainy here in Southern California. I know that pales in comparison to the snow and everything, but when it rains, it's a disaster here. So I'm looking for some bright sunshine from your end.
Well, we have plenty of bright sunshine. We also have temperatures, a little bit below zero.
Oh, wow. How can it go down to nothing and then keep going? I never understood that.
Never understood that either, but that's what we got today, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, who you got with you to talk about and warm us up?
Well, I am very, very excited to be talking to Brian Bennett today. He is an expert on leadership. And just to kick it off here, Brian, you've talked about leadership as being more of a process than a skill. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, the thing is, you know, everyone is born with certain innate skills. But if you don't have the improvement process to get them, make them better, then they may not realize their fullest potential. So it's, you know, something, it's not something that you can just learn how to do, but it's a process you have to put in place every day to get better at it.
Excellent. You hear people talk about this person is a natural born leader, or this person tends to be just a natural manager. Do you really think there is such a thing as a natural leader or a natural manager? And is there any skill set that is absolutely necessary to be a great leader?
Well, I think that, you know, people and leaders are born and made. You can look back to people, kids all the way back to the kindergarten and first grade level, and you'll see that, you know, natural leadership is identified early on in the children. The teachers, I talk to a lot of the teachers, you know, on these levels, and they can identify people who have a natural leadership skill because that's the person the kids all follow and flock to. And what's one of the first games kids learn how to play is follow the leader. And you know who the leader is? That person who's a natural leader, pretty much. So it does happen, a lot of it is natural, but you can still become better at it by the additional training. Take those skills you already have, take those abilities you already have, and refine them and get better at them so that you can be the best leader you can possibly be.
Do you see a difference, though, between being a great leader and being a great manager?
Yes, there is, because a great leader, I call them the exceptional leaders. Those are the ones who direct and inspire people to go, you know, all out for them. You know, I use the term go to the wall for them because, you know, when you want something done and you want someone to work overnight or work on the weekend, whatever like that, you want them to do it and actually say, oh, yeah, I'll do it because I know that, you know, Brian or Mike are going to take good care of me because they're a great leader, they're a great person. But you don't want the person who's saying, well, you had to work the weekend for the next three weekends in a row. The person is going to begrudgingly do it, but they're not going to like it, and they're going to probably look for another job soon.
Gotcha. Is there anything that is absolutely necessary or characteristic about it, maybe human nature, that's absolutely necessary to become a good leader?
Well, there's a certain level. There's two levels. I say great leaders and then there's good leaders. Okay, so start with the ones who are the four qualities identified in, across the board for all leaders to have. Is humility, empathy, risk-taking, and vision. You have to have all four of those to some certain degree. Some of those you can learn, and some of those you can't learn as much. For instance, like the risk-taking and vision, those things you can learn, you can take classes to help you get better at doing that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to humility and empathy, those are things you have to be more authentic at. You can't fake that because people will be able to tell that very easily. So it's important to have that. And I tell people, you know, if you don't like people, you're not going to be a good leader. You have to actually like working with people. If you don't do that, you're not going to survive.
That's wonderful insight. You've talked about professional leadership. What exactly do you mean by that, and how did you kind of arrive at that vision?
Well, professional leadership is, I coined that phrase based on the process that professional athletes use in their training. No matter how good they are, they still continue to practice and improve every day. And I believe leaders need to do the same thing. You know, so many times you talk to people and say, you know, I've learned this leadership, I've learned how to do all this stuff, and they don't keep working at it. But it's a continuous process. You cannot just, you know, rest on your laurels and expect to continue to be a great leader, because things change, business cycles change. I think about back in the day when the autocratic leader was in vogue. You know, you have the Ralph Cramdens and the Archie Bunkers, whatever, they just did whatever they wanted to do, and you know, they weren't really leaders, but they were an example of how to keep people who used to act back in the day. Now, if you don't, you know, work with your people and work and develop them and inspire them, then you're not going to be very successful. So, like I said, based off the professional athletes, you know, look at, you know, athletes like a Michael Jordan. For instance, I grew up in Chicago. I live in California now. But I still think about Michael Jordan all the time, because people think about Michael Jordan as a person who could jump on the free throw line and dunk the basketball. That's the main thing people think about. And you see his shoes, that's the symbol they use on there. But if you follow Michael Jordan's career, over time, he had to change his game around, because he knew that he could not keep doing that. He was taking too much of a physical beating. So he turned around and developed this nasty fadeaway jump shot that he could take from the side of the key, and it was unstoppable. And he also developed a three-point shot. He didn't, you know, from the three-point line. And he just didn't say, look at one morning and say, you know what, I'm going to try this shot in a game. No, I'll bet you he practiced that over and over again until he got better at it and was able to implement it on a regular basis, because he was not missing those shots very often.
Yeah, Brian, what I'm hearing from you, and I've got to agree, is that no matter how good you are at something, you do need to continue to focus on improvement and focus on getting better. And that being said, you've put together a leadership program. Can you tell us just a little bit about it and how maybe it's a little different than other programs out there?
Sure. Well, I'd look at my leadership program, like I said, talks about a process to be refined and not a skill to be learned. What most people tend to do is they take courses trying to learn certain leadership skills when, in fact, they may not be able to take advantage of it to their fullest. And they may like to discipline. You know, we all know people who could sing better or perform better or, you know, play a sport better than some of these professionals out there, but they just didn't have the discipline and the process to get better. So what's important about, you know, my program is it's personalized to the individual. You know, I can't lead like you. You can't lead like me. So you have to know who you are as a person and as a leader and say, okay, I can do that. I can use that and use that in my leadership process and my style. We're all different. We have to embrace those differences and use that to your advantage.
What do you think are the biggest mistakes, though, that you think people make when they're trying to become better leaders?
Well, the biggest mistake people make is they think they can go to a bunch of classes and just become a better leader. And the problem with taking classes is, you know, once you walk out the door, you never hear from the people who taught the class again. They don't know if you've implemented the things they taught you well. They don't know if you have developed it and if they have any questions about it and so forth. So what we do in our program is we start with a class, but before the class, we do some assessments. We start with personality assessment, leadership assessment. We take that, and then we teach them the assessing process in the class, and we walk through, you know, putting together a leadership vision from that. So this is who you are. Now, use that to your advantage to become a better leader. So you take that and say, okay, this is what our leadership is like. This is what I'm going to do. Now you have a vision. Now how are you going to implement that? Then we're walking through several steps to do implementation of that through some of the tools we've implemented for our classes. And then we go through reflecting and the processing. In our 12-month program, we have the course, then we have follow-up coaching, follow-up leadership assessments, impact, and then we also have additional readings. Because as I mentioned before, people have to continue to learn and get better at being a leader. And there's always new things you can learn and read out there about leadership. Most of it is very good. You know, from my classes, what I do is I clip most of these articles, and I post them online for them to read them so that they can, you know, learn some of the new stuff out there, the new concepts out there, and so they can get better at that.
Now, I know you've interviewed a lot of people to kind of develop this vision. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the people you've interviewed and maybe some of the things that they have in common that you might think really qualify them to be considered great leaders?
Well, I interviewed, since this book is focused mostly on healthcare, I interviewed a lot of the healthcare leaders out there that I've met at conferences, or I just called them up and researched them and contacted them. Some of the people who I thought were very interesting was Dr. Toby Cosgrove. He was the former CEO of the Cleveland Clinic. He just stepped down in December. And I think of him as a model in humility. The reason I think about that is because when I wrote my first book 2 years ago on healthcare analytics, I sent, because I did research to him, and I sent him a copy of the book. And of all the healthcare leaders I sent copies of the book to, he was the only one that sent me a personal letter back and said, "Brian, thank you for the book. Hope you do well with it, and call me if you need anything else from me." So I said, "I'm writing a leadership book. I need to call Dr. Cosgrove." So I sent him a note. 2 days later, I got a call from his admin saying, "Dr. Cosgrove would like to schedule an appointment with you to interview for your book." 2 days later, some of these leaders, it took me 2 weeks and months to get done on their schedule. So he called me 2 days later, got on the schedule, we talked, and one of the most surprising things he said to me was, "Brian, I didn't make this job. The job made me." He wasn't even taking credit for all the things he'd done at the Cleveland Clinic. And if you look at their history over the 25 years, before he started there, they were basically, not a whole lot. But he got there and grew the organization, and the things he does there is very innovative, and people really love him. I got to know him and some of the people who work for him, and I could be talking on the phone with some of them. And when he comes to their department to do their town hall meeting or whatever they call it, these people, they just basically hang up the phone on me and run to hear his meeting because they want to hear what he has to say. That's the kind of leader he is. He directs and inspires people to work for him. I also talked to Dr. Laura Farese, who's from New York Presbyterian. I really enjoyed talking to her. She was, it's funny how I met her, because I was at a conference listening to another speaker, and she was sitting right next to me. And we just started talking, and I found out, I didn't know who she was. I didn't know what her position was. And I just started writing a book on leadership, and she said, "This is what I do, and can I let me know if you want any help." So I called her up, and we had a nice chat, and she was really good about meeting. But I think the thing that stands out to her for me is the fact that she was also a great on mentorship. She mentors people in her organization. She is big on having a mentor inside her organization who help her see things that she may not see, and she has outside mentors too, to help her long-time career. Nancy Slipting, she was a CEO at Henry Ford Health System, and her thing I liked about her was she was really good on reflection. She would wake up at 5 o'clock every morning to go over her plan for her day, look over her meeting schedule, and say, "Okay, this is going to be a difficult challenge, difficult meeting. I need to prepare for that." And she walks through scenarios in her head, which is something I like doing myself too. Is when I normally have a difficult conversation with someone, I want to talk, work things out and try to prepare for the different options that may come out of the meeting. So she was impressed with me with that. But I also interview people who are outside of healthcare too, like Larry Quinlan, who's the global CIO of Deloitte. I've talked to him about some of the things he does there, and he's real big on some of the on assessing and knowing who people are and helping to grow his people. A couple of Super Bowl champions, athletes I've had to meet over the years, PGA golf pro, other business people I went to school with from Northwestern. So, it was very good. But one thing I learned from talking to them on a regular basis over these few months I was writing the book is they all pay clearly close attention to how they lead. It's not something you just walk in the door and say, "I'm here now, I'm the president, I'm the CEO, I'm the COO, whatever." They focus on how they lead to make sure that they were doing the right thing for the people who work with them and the people who work for them. The only challenge I found from them when I talked to them was not everyone was like Knight Nancy. Most of them did not spend as much time on reflection as they should have. A lot of times, I guess it's response like we do it once a month or once a year or something like that. But reflection has to be done, something that's done on a daily or, at the worst case, weekly basis.
Well, Brian, that sounds absolutely fascinating. It sounds to me like what you're saying is that a key quality of a leader is that they've really got to care about their team. We're going to take a little break now, but when we come back, I want to talk about your process and exactly how it works and how the people that are listening to the podcast today can not only grow from the process, but maybe even take advantage or learn more about it.
Okay, sounds good.
And just a quick break to let you digest all that and remind you that West Virginia University's online data marketing communications program is the first graduate program of its kind. It really is in a unique program here, focusing on strategic, critical problem solving and informed decision making. The data marketing communications program prepares you for your career by learning these innovative tactics from a whole host of award-winning faculty, like today's host. So if you want to learn more, it's pretty simple. Do what I do. Go to DMC for Data Marketing Communications. DMC.WVU for West Virginia University. DMC.WVU.EDU. Bunch of letters that'll take you to the best program around. Okay, I'm always stumbling over the multiple letters there, the alphabet soup in this thing, but it really is pretty simple. So welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Again, Brian Bennett is my guest today, and this is Michael Lynch. And both Brian and myself are both members of the faculty at West Virginia University. Also, Brian has a background at Northwestern University and actually is a graduate of Northwestern University. Brian, can you kind of walk us through each step of your professional leadership process and maybe outline some of the steps that people might try to skip or get around or cheat on when they're trying to improve their leadership skills?
They wouldn't do that, would they?
No. Who would want to try to take easy way out or try to take
That's
shortcuts?
Right. That's right. Okay. There's five steps to the professional leadership process. The first step is called assessing, then visioning, living, reflecting, and coaching. Assessing is the first step, and that's probably the most important of all the five steps, because that's when you learn who you are as a person, learn who you are as a leader, and also you need to assess the environment you're leading in. And what I mean by that is, I have a model for environmental evaluation, which says a leader, followers, and the environment. And so you have to figure out which kind of situation you're leading. And if your followers are a lot stronger than you are, or your environment is very challenging, you have to change your leadership approach to even out with to be even level with them. Sorry about that. But also you have to look at assessing who you are as a leader. We use a proprietary leadership impact tool that assesses their practice of leadership and the process of leadership. And it helps them to understand where they are. We track that over time in our program to see how they're improving. And just by implementing our program, people typically just improve on that. If we take all that information and we say, okay, now let's build a leadership vision. Who are you going to be as a leader? Information like for me, when I put together this, I looked at myself and I said, I call myself an empathetic leader. I use empathy as one of my tools that I use a lot to understand people I'm working with, get to have a relationship with them so that they will go over and above what I need them to do to be successful. And then the next step is living it. How to put that in the process? What do you do every day to make that work for you? There's several things, the tools we come up with, and we can go into that a little bit more later. But you have a leadership vision, you live that every day. Then the next step is reflecting. How did I do? Did I implement this right? How did my outcomes work? Did I get the outcomes I desired? Or did I not get the outcomes I desired, and so forth? Then the last step in the process is the coaching. You have to have someone giving you some feedback, whether someone who works within the same organization with you or someone outside. And, the difference between coaching and mentoring. You need coaching works on the day-to-day level, how you're doing on every day. Where the mentor is looking at your long-term career. I've been fortunate enough to have both kind of people in my life, in my career, so that I was able to focus on what I need to do on a regular basis, And then add the, you know, the mentors who, you know, I sit down, talk to them and say, this is what I'm doing, what I want to do, and so forth. And they try to make sure and say, hey, you know what, you may want to try this too, and so forth. And when I looked at this, you know, this process, and I was doing some more research on what I come up with, I was looking through some of my leadership training sets that I used to teach and some at the universities, and I found this is very similar to the Kolb's learning cycle, where you conceptualize something, you put it into practice, you execute, and then you reflect on it. And that's the very same process that, that I came up with here. The process is 4 steps minus 5 steps. But if you look at it, the most overlooked step that I found has been reflection. So people, you know, don't want to do it. They think it takes too much time. But it's actually, for the long term, it does them a lot better in the long term because, you know, just sitting down and jotting down some notes doesn't take that long. It takes, you know, 10, 15 minutes. Write down some notes of what you could have, what you did, what you encountered during the day, and how you could have done better or whatever. And having those reflect on, because you need those notes when you go sit down with your coach or your mentor. You say, this is what I came up with. This is how I handled it. What do you think I should have done? Could I have done anything differently and so forth? That he or she can tell you, well, you know what, you could have done this or that, or you did a great job at it, one of the two. So you need to have, you know, a documented journal that has the information in there. So, but you can't do that once a year or once a month, which is what I've heard from a lot of people. But you have to have it something that's preferably daily, but at a minimum, you need to do it weekly. You know, look at what you did over the week and jot down some notes and go from there.
Now, that's great. I see your process here being a lot similar to marketing processes, where a step that seems to be missed very often is reflection or analysis of how a particular marketing program might have gone, and subsequently you can't use that information. In the living step of your process, you identify 6 tools that leaders need to improve their leadership. Which of those tools do you think are the easiest, and what do you think are the most challenging?
Well, the 6 tools, I'll just state them off here right now. Communication, motivation, observation, empathy, storytelling, and social leadership. The easiest ones for most leaders is the communication and motivation. Communication is articulating your vision for what you want things to be done and how you things want in your company or your department or whatever, communicating that explicitly to your team. And motivation is, you know, using, you know, financial or time off or whatever kind of means to motivate people. But using those at the base level is not enough for most people. You have to communicate with people, you know, on a personal level, know what they're how they like to communicate, whether it be through, you know, email, you know, text, whatever, phone calls, motivation. You want to make sure you're inspiring people to do what needs to be done. But still, those are the two easiest steps of the tools. The two hardest ones are the storytelling and social leadership. You know, people remember stories a lot easier than they do than if you tell them a bunch of numbers. You know, for most of my career, I've done a lot of analytics and, you know, had to present models to clients and so forth. And when I can tell them what the numbers mean, you know, what they actually means to them as a customer, as to their customers, then they can relate to it and say, oh, this is what I can do with that, as opposed to just filing off a bunch of numbers. So storytelling becomes very important. It's becoming very more and more important nowadays, where you can sit there and tell people about things so they remember it a lot easier. But the other one is a social leadership. And that's kind of new for most people, and a lot of people have an aversion to it, but it's exactly what it sounds like. It's using social media to communicate with your constituents and with your community. So you may use, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever, to communicate with your people by, you know, sending out notes and stuff like that. But it's important that if you're using that, you have to not just, you know, retweet something or just, you know, something generic. It has to be something that you're in that. You know, as a leader, you want to be involved in that. So that process. So I have the person who wrote the foreword for my book, Chris Van Gorder from Scripps Health in San Diego. I met him online, and I followed him online for a long time, and I watched how his social media skills were. And what he would do is he'd talk about things he was doing in the community, things that people in his hospital were doing. You know, when they had the fires out here last summer, he was out there at the fire site with his EMTs, helping them get the job done. So that's a social leader. It's not just
that's great, Brian. We're getting ready to wrap it up now. Could you tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, how they can find out more about your program, and the name of some of the books you've published?
First book I published was Competing on Healthcare Analytics. You can find that on Amazon, or you can find that on my company site, Healthcare Center of Excellence. It's healthcarecoe.org. The second book I did was Prescribing Leadership in Healthcare. And that's also on Amazon and on our website, healthcarecoe.org. I'm writing a third book on leadership called The Path to Professional Leadership. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can go to the website, to the note there, or contact me at brian@healthcarecoe.org.
Well, again, I want to thank Brian Bennett today. I have learned a lot about this and cannot wait to put some of these steps to use myself. Again, thank you very much, and we're going to turn it back to the studio.
You've been listening to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today, right here on the Funnel Radio Channel for at-work listeners like you.